And now, fighting out of the red corner, CagePotato.com!
Bruce Buffer, everybody! Let's hear it for him!
And I'm not going to touch that one with a 25-foot pole, Morrow.
I'd like to touch it with a 25-centimeter one, but instead we'll just call the fight as now with Neon.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
Yo, this your boy Kimbo Slice. Check this out. When you ain't got shit to do and you're in front of your computer, I want you to read CagePotato.com. CagePotato.com. Because tapping out is for bitches.
My name is Velasquez, and Cage Potato is the best.
Hey, my name is Carl the Heat Breeze.
This is Jorge Rivera.
This is Melvin, the young assassin Gillard.
This is UFC heavyweight Pat HD, the babysitter, Tap Dance Barry. And you're listening to the Bum Rush Radio Show. Yeah!
Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of the Bum Rush Radio Show on the Cage Potato Radio Network. I'm Ben Goldstein. With me are my brothers in arms, Mike Russell and Chad Dundas. Tell you what, guys, it's good to be back. I'm sure you missed the sound of my voice. It's a relatively fertile period for MMA right now, and we've got a lot to talk about this week. We'll be giving some final thoughts on Strikeforce Diaz versus Cyborg, and looking ahead to UFC 126, Silva versus Belfort, this Saturday in Las Vegas. So let's get into it.
Cage Potatoes Bum Rush Fight News.
So just a couple weeks after the UFC made this big show of coming to Madison Square Garden, announcing their intentions to get MMA sanctioned in New York, and after reportedly contributing $75,000 to Governor Andrew Cuomo's election campaign, it was revealed late Wednesday night that MMA sanctioning was not included in the 2011-2012 budget proposal. Of course, there's always hope that a sanctioning bill can get passed through more traditional channels. But, you know, of course, that hasn't really worked in the past. And the UFC was banking on this. This was their, you know, easy way in. Basically, New York screwed the UFC. And now Dana White says he's done with predictions. That's a quote about MMA sanctioning in New York. When it happens, it happens. I hate to hear that because it's not going to happen. If you just leave it up to, if it happens, it happens. It doesn't. But I don't know what else they could do at this point. What do you guys think? Have you completely given up hope about sanctioning New York? Is the political climate just too toxic over there?
For me, like, I've been dealing here with the commission in Ontario, and I've worked with that group that's been kind of, you know, acting, I guess, as a bipartisan source of information for them, because they came in not knowing anything about MMA. To me, like, part of that news is that Cuomo wants to cut funding for the commissioner in New York too. So,
right,
you know, that's a big deal. If it's not somebody's job to run the commission and they're not being paid for it, that opens up a whole other can of worms where, you know, how much dedication, how much energy is he going to put into sanctioning events? And the other thing is, too, the reality of it is it could open up, you know, to somebody taking kickbacks. If you're not getting paid to do something and somebody offers you an under-the-table bribe or something to do something to get it done, I don't know. There's a lot of things going on, I think, that are – it's kind of moving in the wrong direction from our standpoint, wanting to get the sport sanctioned. I don't know. It doesn't look good, and I don't know how much closer we're going to be in the next couple of years in New York. I can't see it happening now within, you know, the next couple of years at least, but it's not a good thing when they're threatening to take money away from that area rather than put it into an area that, you know, there's donations being made. And, like, even the UFC has put, you know, millions of dollars in campaign donations in even to Cuomo's pocket. So It's very – I can see why Dana's so pissed off.
Yeah, and I think I saw that in the report I read that there's only six states left in the U.S. that don't sanction the sport. And keep in mind, that's just basically like New York that doesn't want it, and then the few other states that just don't have athletic commissions. It's just like it seems like New York is the only state where you have politicians actively coming against it and winning these political victories. I don't know, Chad, anything to add? How important is New York as a piece of the puzzle in getting sort of MMA mainstream acceptance in this country? And just like, is it a big deal? Or are we making too much of a big deal of it?
In a certain sense, I think it's a big deal, but I think it's a big deal just because of the sort of panache that goes along with being able to stage events in New York City and Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
In sort of a big picture sense, MMA is more of a totally television driven sport. You know, it's kind of like people making a big deal about where they hold the Super Bowl. And this week it's been a big story that the weather in Dallas has been terrible. And like that, the media has kind of tried to turn that into a story, when the truth is that like 50,000 people go to watch the Super Bowl live, but millions of people watch the Super Bowl on television. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter what the weather is like at the place where the Super Bowl is going to be. That's a little bit like this to me. I mean, it would be sort of a nice feather in the cap of MMA to get sanctioned in New York and be able to advertise that and kind of tuck it in its back pocket. But at the same time, it doesn't really matter. I don't think that the average fan really cares. The average fan that's watching pay-per-view at a bar or at their home, they don't care where the fight is happening.
Yeah, I agree. So let's move on to much less important topics here. As we saw on Thursday, Gina Carano just came out of hiding. She's a recluse these days, but to get in a session of pad work at Extreme Couture, are either of you taking this as a sign that she could be preparing for a comeback in MMA, or do you even care, Chad? What do you think?
I don't really care. Yeah. I've never been a big Carano guy.
You're more Cyborg?
I guess, yeah. No, actually, I am, yeah. I guess it would be good for female MMA to have her back in theoretical ways. Again, there's always so many question marks around what weight she's going to fight at, who's she going to fight, like how legitimate were the wins that she stacked up before she got beat by Cyborg. Who knows, man? If she comes back and wants to be a full-time fighter, I certainly don't have a problem with it, but it's not going to get anything more than an eyebrow raise from me.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, the question that comes along with these stories about Gina Carano is like, oh, is she just going to pursue acting full time? And, you know, one big movie doesn't mean you'll have a career.
Yeah, let's wait till we see the show first, you know?
Well, it's not even that. I mean, The A-Team was a huge movie, and Quentin Jackson hasn't done anything in that realm since then. It's just, you know, sometimes you're the right person for the right role, and then you're sort of forgotten. But
yeah, especially since now I don't want to say anything about Haywire before it comes out, but Steven Soderbergh is sort of... it's kind of his MO to make a bunch of like small time weird movies on small budgets that he shoots in like 2 or 3 weeks. If I'm not mistaken, he did that with like the Girlfriend Experience that
yes.
Sasha Grey in it and stuff like that. So
she thought she was a crossover and have this mainstream career. That didn't happen really either. I don't know. I haven't followed her recent work.
So, you know, before I pass judgment on Gina Carano's acting career, I need to see exactly what kind of film Haywire is. Is it, I don't even know if it's going to be like a major theater release or if it's just going to be one of these Soderbergh projects that just kind of, you know, he slips in the back door while he's not doing bigger projects.
Right. Mike, what do you think? I mean, does women's MMA need her back?
I think Strikeforce does if they want to keep promoting women's MMA, because I don't think they've quite got that acceptance, like the level of acceptance that male MMA has gotten, especially for them. And, you know, Dana even talks about how she was the biggest star of the sport, and I don't know. I don't know that she's going to come back. To me, it kind of makes sense that she is thinking of coming back, because why go for the first time, I guess, in almost 2 years back to Extreme Couture? Mm-hmm. You know, they were talking. Randy said he hadn't even talked to her. Like the last time somebody interviewed him and asked him if he thought she'd be back, he said, no, she hasn't been to the gym. I haven't spoken to her. She hasn't contacted anybody. So it almost makes me think that something's going on, because she could have just gone to any gym to work out if she was worried about her weight or whatever. But yeah. I don't know. And as far as her acting career goes, I guess, you know, there's that story that came out that Steven Spielberg rushed her off the set of, I don't know if it was Haywire or something else she was working on, to talk and read about, you know, another script that was that he had a character in mind for. So who knows? It'll be, I guess we'll have to wait and see, because, you know, to the typical fan that liked the A-Team, I guess it was a big, you know, big break for Rampage. But to everybody else who actually maybe watches decent movies and decent films, it's the fact that he considers himself this actor now doesn't really, you know, I don't see him being an actor in my eyes. You know, he's like a bit part, you know, thug that'll be in the background of some other movies. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. It doesn't, to me, the movie just sounds like a ripoff of The Bourne Identity. So yeah. It's not like I'm going to be rushing out to see it. I'll have to wait till it comes on video.
Oh, come on. You'll see it at least illegally. It's Gina Carano. It's sort of part of your job.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, because I didn't want to say that I partake in any of that. But I suppose if an envelope unmarked ends up in my mailbox with a movie in it, and I might be curious to watch it, and if it's that movie, then I'll probably watch the whole thing. So we'll leave it at that.
And if I'm it's expensing that movie, it. I'm expensing it.
Good,
I'm
absolutely.
I'm going to the theater
and
buying myself a jumbo popcorn and a giant soda, and it's all getting expensed.
Maybe we could actually go to the premiere. Maybe that'd be an event that we could look at getting credentialed for, either through us or through Break somehow.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, we'll crash it and we'll just yell, when are you coming back to MMA?
All right. Moving on, you know, besides the two events that are sort of bookending this week, a bit of a slow news week, but we'll just run down some notable fight bookings from the past few days. One that I posted on a few days ago is Joe Stevenson versus Danny Castillo. It's going to be at either UFC Live or UFC on Versus 3, Sanchez versus Campman on March 3rd. Castillo, he's coming off a couple, you know, wins over sort of lower level guys in the WEC. Stevenson, as we know, he just came up, you know, he's dropped two in a row. He just got knocked out by Mac Danzig, of all people, in December. So it's sort of his win or go home fight. Do you guys think he'll be able to rebound against a, you know, what is on paper rebound opponent? Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, he should. I mean, if he loses to Danny Castillo, that's pretty bad. Castillo, I think, lost to Shane Roller and then Anthony Pettis
right.
in the WEC before he kind of bounced back and drove Dustin Poirier into the featherweight division and then beat Will Kerr, I think, something like that. This is one of those fights where you look at it and you think, boy, if Stevenson loses this and he gets fired, that's not good, especially since Strikeforce isn't signing guys off UFC losses now. So yeah, you'd like to believe this, and this does, it smacks of a get back fight for Stevenson, and you'd like to see him come out, have a good performance, and kind of get back to where he was before suffering those losses.
Right. I mean, the only thing you got to worry about it, you know, Stevenson, you know, losing two fights in a row, I wonder if that's a sign that he's sort of fading anyway. I don't know. Do you think that's the case, Mike, or just sort of, you know, running into better guys and he'll be able to beat Castillo?
Yeah, I think it's a tough call, because if you look at the guys he's lost, you know, I guess if he loses this one, it'll be like something like six fights in his last nine that he's lost, which is crazy yeah. when you think about it. But when you look at the level of competition that he's fought, guys like Penn, guys like, you know, Diego,
Florian,
Kenny Florian, yeah. Sotteropoulos. I think Danzig was the only anomaly in there. He was the only guy that wasn't considered a contender at some point. So, you know, and that was, it can be debated that he was kind of doing all the right things till he got caught with that punch. So I think that's maybe how the UFC are looking at it. He was kind of their go-to guy when it came to fighting contenders. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know if it's that he's getting a little bit older. I don't know, like, what exactly the problem is here, but he doesn't seem to be the same fighter that he was even a couple years ago, just from judging by, maybe it's his game plan. He's working with Greg Jackson too, might be, you know, everybody questions whether the game plan might have something mm-hmm. to do with it, but he's not an old guy, really, like 28 years old in
he's
MMA
just been doing
years.
It for a long time. Yeah. That's the problem. It's like he's been fighting since he was like 16.
Yeah, and he's been a dad since he was like 12, right? That's how he got his nickname.
Exactly. So those are long years, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You know, he might be young, you know, on paper, but he's been in the game for
I'm
a
like
long
86
time.
In bad years.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Next one, let's go on to UFC 129 in April. We just found out that Nate Diaz is going to get a return fight against Rory McDonald. Diaz just dropped a decision to Donghyun Kim. McDonald, his last fight, he got TKO'd, you know, just with seconds left in the fight, in the Carlos Condit fight. So as far as where these guys are in the division, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, one of them's got to get their sort of momentum back. I'm just not sure, you know, it's kind of a tough fight to call for me, though. I think Rory McDonald's really good. Diaz is obviously great, unless he runs into a guy who has great wrestling who can smother him. Is McDonald that guy? I don't know. Mike, what do you think?
I think he is. And, you know, I followed Rory's career since, you know, basically his first fight. And King of the Cage was kind of where he had all of his fights. And people talked about, you know, he had some easy fights here and there. And then as soon as he stepped up level in competition, he beat everybody that they put in front of him, too. So I don't know. I think the problem is he always fought at 155 and then he moved up to 170 and it was people question whether that was the right move for him or not. And, this, you know, Diaz is in the same boat. So I think, you know, the fact that he did as well as he did against Carlos Condit, that he did pretty good against Mike Guyman, you know, I don't know. I think he's going to take the fight. And I think that if he does, it's going to be probably another step up in competition for him. Like, you figure, he got thrown in with the Lions against Condit. Condit, you know, former WEC champion. A lot of people thought he was kind of on a downslide in his career, but now they're talking after that win and maybe a couple more wins, he might get a title shot. So I don't know. I think he's still young and I think he's still got a lot of room to grow. I talked to John Schamberg about him and he said the major thing that we'll notice with the fight, his next fight, will be that he's he's been doing a lot more strength training and a lot more cardio training. So mm-hmm. he said when he got him, he said it was almost like when he got GSP, that he was a lot weaker than he thought, you know, he should have been at that point, being how good he was. So he said that you know, everybody's got that line, expect a totally different Rory McDonald or whoever it is fighting, insert name here. But I don't know. I think that's probably part of his game that he was missing in the Condit fight. That's probably going to make a big difference against a guy like Diaz.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if he's able to overpower Diaz, that'll be a huge advantage. Chad, who's your pick in this one?
I mean, you know, McDonald's so young that you don't want to call it kind of a make or break fight for him. But if he loses to Nate Diaz, then he might want to think about maybe 155 again, just because he was kind of handling Carlos Condit and then sort of seemed to fade late. And if you see a replay of that against Diaz, maybe it just means he's in the wrong weight class. But it's a fight that you think that McDonald should win.
Yeah. And moving on again, the next month, May 28th, UFC 130. We just found out, we reported on this already, but it's official now. That's Wanderlei Silva versus Brian Stann. It's going to happen at that event. You know, almost wish that, you know, Silva just beat Stann's ass as as punishment to the UFC for like what they did to Chris Leben. I mean, if you know what I mean. But I guess it'll be an all right fight. I think it's a good return for Silva. It's a winnable fight for him. Stann has looked good for sure. But I don't know. I still think, you know, Silva has a couple good performances left in him. You know, I'll go with the old legend in this one. Chad, your thoughts?
Yeah, you kind of get the impression that maybe these fighters know something we don't, just because it seems like everybody gets a win at 185 and suddenly they want to fight Wanderlei, you know, or they want to fight Bisping. It's almost like those are the big names that everyone in the game thinks that they can beat. Mm-hmm. And that's sad for Wanderlei, because obviously he's a great fighter. And Stann, I still think, is relatively unproven at 185, just because, you know, he beat Mike Massenzio, and then Chris Leben was kind of a matchup of styles that I thought favored Stann. And God, you got to say the same thing about Wanderlei Silva, I guess. So it could go either way. I'm going to vote with my heart and say Wanderlei, I guess.
I think we're both voting with our heart. Yeah. Mike, are you going to vote with your heart as well?
No, I'm going to be the, I guess, voice the dissenting voice. Yeah, voice of reason, however you want to put it. I think Stann will probably take it. And you know what? I don't want to see that happen. I want, you know, Wanderlei's a guy you don't want to bet against, guy you don't want to see lose. But you know what? If he loses that's six of his last eight that he's lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to wonder. He beat Bisping, which was a questionable decision, some thought. Some, you know, it was very close. I thought he won, but I don't know. Keith Jardine's his biggest win in the last couple of years, and I don't know if that's enough to keep him around. 5 years, I think that was his biggest win other than Bisping. So,
Silva is one of those guys, I think, like Dana White has said in the past, oh, yeah, he'll sort of always have a job here because he's exciting and fans love him.
Translator. Did you see what happened last night? Yeah, they need a translator. The guy got fired during the press conference yesterday.
I actually didn't see that. I'll have to watch that. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I meant to say was, you know, if he does lose to Stann, should they keep him around?
I'd like to see him. He's a, like you said, or like, sorry, like Chad said, he's a guy that everybody wants to fight once they get a win or two. And I think almost a lot of guys look at him as, you know, standing at the gate to the top five or a title shot, because even Alan Belcher, he's coming back and he said that he's one of the guys that he asked for as soon as he came back. And I'm thinking to myself, why does everybody want to fight a guy that has the record that he's had the last 5 years? You know, two wins in the last 5 years should not be a guy that you're aiming for, even though everybody's just kind of looking at it like, well, he's the axe murderer. He used to be, you know, in Pride, he was a force to be reckoned with. Maybe just because he comes out and puts on a good fight. He's got a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and you never see him take it to the ground, try to submit a guy. He's always going to stand in the pocket and bang. So maybe that's what people are looking at. It's not going to make them look boring in comparison.
Also, the other side of that is like, you know, you get booked with a fight against Wanderlei Silva and you're going to be on the poster. It's like Stann coming off his win against Leben. Yeah, he'll get a higher level opponent, but I mean, he could be, I mean, if it's a big card, he could be put in on the prelims. You never know.
He's not going to talk shit about you either, because Wanderlei is usually a pretty straight up guy when it comes to fights, unless somebody says something about him first. So, you know, maybe you don't have to worry about anything but training when you're training for a fight with him.
That's a good point as well. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's more of a promotional concern. You know, like, this is going to be a big fight. We'll be, you know, co-headliner or third fight in the card, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the last thing we wanted to mention is that we will indeed, now this is official, it'll be at the Fan Expo in Toronto, April 29th and 30th. We're very excited. As you guys know, we had a great time in Boston when they did that in August. The user Get Up and Kill has already volunteered to help us out over there, and so we'll be, you know, we'll be having some more contests and things, and you know, hopefully we can get some of you readers in the area to help out or just stop by and say hi so we can meet you. But yeah, we're pretty psyched for that. I don't know, Mike, anything else to add about that?
You know what? It'll be interesting to see if we cross paths with Dana or anybody from the UFC that weekend. Yeah. Because, you know, as everybody knows, we're kind of banned at this point or on the blacklist at this point. So, you know, we've got some things in the works to that, I guess, that are in that vein, you know, that are pretty interesting coming down the pipe, some contests and stuff. So, I don't know.
I don't want to get thrown out on the first day. I'd rather get thrown out on the second day.
End of the second day. Technically, we've paid, right? We probably won't get thrown out of the expo, but we may get barred at the door from going to the UFC event. I'm thinking of dressing up as someone else. Maybe we could wear our I'm Ben Folk shirt, or we'll get a. You can shave your head and pretend you're Ariel Helwani.
Well, I'll just pose as a member of. God, what's Bloodstained Lane's troll kitchen?
The team takedown or team takeover?
Yeah, we can come in as team takeover members. They'll have to let us in.
Actually, I think he's got a war going on with Dana right now, doesn't he?
Oh, God.
Just put your fingerless gloves on and your sunglasses and just sneak right in.
And, you know, put on a Long Island accent and you're good.
Well, he loves Canadians, so you could always just dress as a Canadian. Wear your Canadian tuxedo.
I don't know. I don't know if I...
You can pull
might
it
be
off.
A little too embarrassing to go out in public in the jeans and the jean jacket. We'll talk about that. But lots more details about the Fan Expo to come. Yeah. And we're psyched about it. And I hope you guys.
That'll be fun. You guys will be in my stomping grounds this time
around.
So it'll be good.
Hopefully I can get across the Canadian border. You know, whatever.
I'll pull some strings. I got some priors. Connections. You got priors. What do they involve? Speeding tickets, I'm guessing, and
something like that. Speeding, jaywalking, you know, some of the stash charge. So we don't have to talk about it right now, yeah. But I'll be fine. It's Canada. Cool. Diaz versus Cyborg went down last weekend. Nick Diaz picked up his ninth straight victory, finishing Evangelista Santos by armbar. That's the male Cyborg. You know, after the fight, I saw a few contrarian articles online from bloggers saying we should slow the hype train down on Diaz because he hasn't fought top competition. The argument being that, you know, Diaz can't be top five because he hasn't beaten anybody close to top five. I was wondering, you know, if you guys agreed with that, you know, about how high would you rank Nick Diaz at this point, and how would he do against the top welterweights in the UFC? Chad, we'll start with you.
Man, I think it's a real conundrum right now because certainly since he left the UFC, I think in 2006 or 2007, Diaz has appeared to be a dramatically different fighter than when we saw in the octagon. I think he's won 10 to 12 fights, and his two official non-wins were the loss to KJ Nunes and the no contest against Takanori Gomi, which was actually a win. And he's looked, you know, better and better and more complete and more dominating in every appearance. And yet I do think that the one chink in the armor there is that you don't know if he's fighting top competition. I mean, Cyborg Santos, and then he went five rounds with KJ Nunes, and before that, Mario Saromskis. So, it's a problem, and it's you know, for guys like us who allegedly get paid to like know where fighters stand, it's hard to say. And you know, I'd say probably around five or six, but there's no way to tell without him, you know, fighting top competition. And which probably means no way to tell without him coming back to the UFC, which is kind of shitty when you think about it. But I think that's the reality. Yeah.
Mike, anything to add on that? I mean, do you hypothetically rank him in the top five or higher? I mean, personally, I think he beats almost every UFC welterweight except George St. Pierre. You know, maybe he'll have trouble. You know, he get blanketed by Fitch or someone like that. But everybody else, I see him being at least very competitive with. But then again, he hasn't fought anybody on the level. So how can you really rank him? I mean, what do you think? How would you put him at this point?
Yeah, I think it's hard to know exactly where he stands. But if you look at it, he hasn't been finished, I guess, since about 2002 when he lost to Jeremy Jackson. Ever since then, you know, everything's been just by decision. I think I'd like to see him and Jake Shields fight, even though it would never happen, because I think he's better than Jake Shields. But It's tough to say because, like you said, who at 170 has he fought that's, you know, been really impressive? He fought KJ Nunes, who was coming up from lightweight. most of the guys that he's beaten lately are all 185ers. Like, he beat Frank Shamrock, he beat Scott Smith. Evangelistos Santos was actually a 185er for most of his career. So, I don't know, it's hard. It's kind of like that whole MMA math thing where what kind of sense does it make? You know, even Sakurai was a guy that when he beat him, he wasn't that, you know, wasn't at the top of his game. So I'd like to see him fight somebody that people, you know, definitively think are in the top 10. And then, you know, we'd have to go from there. But it's hard because who does Strikeforce have that they're going to put up against him that's going to you know, actually give us that kind of a litmus test of where he stands?
Right. I mean, I completely agree with that. And, you know, that being said, it's hard not to be just so impressed with Diaz every time you see him. You know, on Saturday, it's just something else you was reminded, you know, about him is just the fact that he's got such a great chin. You know, he was just eating those power punches to the face without even blinking. And yet whenever he puts his hands on Santos with those jabs and those sort of looping, you know, crosses, you know, Santos would go stumbling around the cage like he's been hit with a sledgehammer. It's crazy how effectively he uses striking, and yet he appears to have an iron chin. So, I mean, the dude's got all the attributes. Even though when we say, oh, man, like, why does he box? Why does he get in these firefights when he doesn't need to? I mean, he just looks so great at the end of the day. So, I mean, yeah. I think we're all big fans of his. But, you know, here's another talking point is this Herschel Walker debate. I mean, following the event, there seems to be two opinions out there. And, you know, before the event as well, it's just like Herschel Walker beating up nobodies in Strikeforce is a freak show. Okay, that's one way to look at it. Or, you know, he's a compelling product that's fighting exactly the level of competition he should be facing at this point. You know, I was just wondering where you guys lean on that sort of debate. I mean, my only problem is, like, I get why you put Herschel Walker on television, but it sort of also means we're subjected to seeing someone on the level of Scott Carson on Showtime, you know? So, I don't know. What do you make of it, Mike? What do you think?
I think it's too early, really, to tell exactly. Like, the guy's 48 years old, and yeah, he's a freakish athlete, but, I mean, Scott Carson isn't, you know, people were saying that he might have trouble with him because he had the experience on him, but I don't know. I'd like to see... I don't even know who I want to see him fight next because, you know, you give him too stiff a competition, people are saying, well, he's only had two MMA fights. You give him too easy a competition, then people are going to say they're just feeding cans to him. They're just trying to build up his career. So I don't know. It's interesting. You know, maybe a guy like Bobby Lashley who doesn't have a whole lot of MMA experience.
That'd be nice.
You know what I mean? A fight like that that'll actually challenge him, and kind of the same thing with Diaz, give us an idea of where he stands right now because they're kind of at similar points in their career. And I know they've got different backgrounds, but they're both, you know, known for their athleticism and their strength. So to me, that'd be the type of fight that I wouldn't mind seeing. As far as, you know, people calling it probably a freak show fight, that's a fight that I wouldn't mind seeing in Strikeforce.
Yeah, I mean, Chad, what do you think? Does the idea of Herschel Walker, is him competing entertaining enough for you to make it worth it seeing two guys who have, like, you know, 2-0 records competing on a Showtime card?
For me, no. You know, I had a couple of guys who I talked to came back from this latest Strikeforce show, and they were both like, wow, you know, that Herschel Walker, man, you can say what you want to about him, but he's really charismatic. And that's fine. But I mean, I don't think he's proved anything actually in the cage yet. He's certainly looked pretty good in this latest fight and got a win in the first fight, even though maybe it was a little bit boring. But not only is he not fighting anyone we've heard of, but this fight against Scott Carson was a 220-pound catchweight fight, right? So he's fighting these nobodies at a weight class that doesn't really exist. So for Walker to be considered any sort of legitimate MMA fighter, in my mind, he needs to, A, in his next fight somebody that we've at least heard of, and also, like, either cut the weight to get down and fight at light heavyweight or, you know, face legitimate heavyweights. Don't make these stipulations that you're only going to fight these, like, weird cruiserweight-sized guys, because that, you know, that doesn't tell me anything about where he stands in either division. Now, I think that the argument that can be made for Herschel Walker's involvement in MMA being positive is that he somehow brings some sort of positive attraction to the sport from football fans or from people who know him because of his other athletic endeavors. And that, I think, is a little bit more legitimate. But at the same time, I think anybody who's old enough to remember when Herschel Walker played in the NFL and is also keyed into the sports scene enough to remember when Herschel Walker played in the NFL or at Georgia, knows that Herschel Walker is crazy. I mean, I don't think that Herschel Walker, like, enjoys this panache of his personality. Like, I don't think he's respected as like an arbiter of good taste or anything like that. So it's like, I don't really understand what he brings to the table aside from sheer curiosity at this point.
Go on.
Sorry, he donates his whole purse to charity. That's kind of, I guess, one thing that he does. But
that's crazy in itself.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably why he only makes about $5,000 a fight. You know, anybody else would have probably signed a contract if they were coming out of football or coming out of, you know, Kimbo Slice you look at. He didn't sign for $5,000 just to prove himself, so... It's interesting.
No, hey, man, hey, make no mistake about it. I think Herschel Walker's heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the bad guy in any of this. I don't even know if there is a bad guy. I'm just saying, like, if he's going to fight on Showtime, have him fight somebody I've heard of.
Yeah.
Right. Wait, Chad, just a follow-up question to that. Do you believe or not believe the fact that he eats one meal a day and it's usually soups or salads late at night?
No, man. I had a sports journalist that I know who – has covered guys that Herschel Walker played with at the University of Georgia, told me, this is like third-hand gossip, so I don't, you know, take this for what it's worth.
From but decades sports, ago.
Yeah, third-hand gossip from decades
before
ago.
Before soup was even created.
Yeah, these teammates at Georgia of Herschel Walker's were like, oh yeah, you know, Herschel Walker eats one meal a day until it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and then he's in the kitchen making himself a sandwich and wolfing down chicken wings. But yeah. Other than that, yeah, sure, he eats one meal a day.
And 700 push-ups a day, he says he does, too. Where does he find time to do anything else?
He's like, he's Chael Sonnen. He's got whatever disease Chael has.
But loose lip syndrome.
Donates to charity, so maybe not exactly. Let's move on. We really got to get through this card. You know, the other champion of the night, Ronaldo Jacare Souza, he defended his title against Robbie Lawler. God, I don't even know what happens next. I mean, at this point, do you force Souza to fight someone like Jason Miller? Jacare said he didn't want to fight him. Do you hold a tournament to find another challenger and just bite the structure of Bellator completely? Or do you just keep him on ice until another contender comes along? I don't know. What's going on in the middleweight title picture? Do any of you have any insight?
Yeah. You know what? It looks to me, the fact that they took the Miller... what do you call it? Fight away. Who's he supposed to fight?
Tim Kennedy
fight. It almost seems that's what they're angling towards. But you know, there's talk that Nick Diaz is going to step away for pro boxing. So their titles are all going to be, if they're going to pick and choose who they're going to fight, when they're going to fight, their titles are all going to be held ransom. So I think that fight makes sense because who else are you going to put him at 185? You know, I guess you look at the fact that what he did to Robbie Lawler, you know, he went right through him. There's nobody that has the combination of grappling and striking that Miller does at 185 now. So to me, the fight makes sense, but they've already fought twice before, but the one fight, you know, kind of ended in controversy. So for him to say, you know, I beat him twice before, it didn't prove anything because he won by disqualification. So to me, that's about the only real fight that I'm really interested in seeing. And that's kind of the way I think that Strikeforce is looking at things now. They'll probably put it to text vote like they did, you know, on the weekend, who he should fight next. And they'll probably decide that way for all we know, because the way that they've been picking their fights before hasn't been working, you know, and sitting well with fans. So who knows what they're going to do. But I think that's about the only fight I want to see right now at 185 for him, unless they bring somebody else in.
Yeah. Does that make sense to you, Chad, or would you rather see Miller Kennedy or rather see another contender go up against Souza?
Well, I mean, if Dan Henderson's not going to fight at 185, then does Strikeforce even have a legitimate
contender,
middleweight contender?
Like, yeah.
It has to be. It has to be Mayhem. And, you know, with them like pulling him out of this Tim Kennedy fight and pretending like they didn't, that like that fight was never an option. Yeah. It seems like that's probably what they're angling for, unless they suddenly think that they can put together Diaz versus Miller, which I think is the best fight for them to make. But, you know, short of that, you have to give Jacare some kind of test, just because I don't know what you even do with the guy. In addition to that, he seems to be far and away the best middleweight that Strikeforce has, and yet no one outside of the hardest hardcore MMA fan has any idea who he is or even cares about him. So I mean, you gotta think that they would love to get the belt off that guy, but maybe that's just me.
They should let Diaz go up and try to hold two belts at the same time.
Yeah, that'd be
just for the fact that Jacare doesn't want to fight Miller. He said as much. And, you know, whatever. It's a challenge for Diaz. He's got nothing to do right now. I mean, talk about another division without too many, I mean, contenders outside of Paul Daly. And I think we all sort of would imagine that Diaz would sub him out or, you know, whatever. He'd beat Daly. So I don't know. I think Souza Diaz. That makes sense to me. But okay, last fight on the card, Roger Gracie. He beat Trevor Prangley Hoger. Hoger Gracie beats Trevor Prangley, first round choke. Not a bad result for his fourth MMA fight. But how far can this guy go in the sports, and what do you do with him next if you're Strikeforce? It's sort of the same question. Like, you know, they have divisions that are sort of thin. You know, the contender ladder isn't quite sorted out. Gracie's a really good prospect that any promotion would be glad to have. I'm just wondering what his next step would be, if you guys had any ideas. Mike, anything?
Well, technically, he just beat the Shark Fight light heavyweight champion, so I guess that makes him the new Shark Fight heavyweight champion by default.
I don't know if the Shark Fight strap was on the line.
Yeah, no, to me, that was a big win for him, but again, you know, I'd love to see him go in with a guy that's just going to punch him in the head when he goes for takedowns, because that kind of, you know, I don't know if that style of fighting is going to get him that far. You know, like we saw what happened with Hoist Gracie when people started figuring things out and figuring out takedown defense and figuring out, you know, his style. So I don't know. I want to see him move up in competition, but again, who do you put him up with? It's a conundrum with a guy that only has a few fights. Who's next for him? You know, like,
well, I tell you what, I just read, you know, a few days ago, something that, you know, Gegard Mousasi was going to come back, and he said he was going to fight Mike Kyle. So maybe the loser of that fight, would be a big step up, but a good match for Gracie.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a real big step up. I don't know if he's ready for somebody like that. Even Kyle's a tough challenge for him because we've seen what Kyle can do. So I don't know. I don't envy the matchmakers at Strikeforce for a lot of reasons, but this is one of them. So
yeah, plus they have like, you know, eight different fighters screaming to the press in public how they don't get fights.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just happening more and more.
And Scott Coker's a pig fucker, apparently, or whatever it was he said.
Well, you do it one time in your life and all of a sudden you're a pig fucker.
Yeah.
Chad, anything to add about the Hoger Gracie situation?
No, I mean, it's the same old Strikeforce story. You know, their roster is so shallow and they don't use their prelim fights to build up any new talent. So it puts them in a real tough place. And I don't know what they do with a guy who looks to be a legitimate prospect, but a guy that you can't rush into anything. Hell, have him fight Herschel Walker.
Right. I know exactly. Well, that would be an interesting match. Or, you know, have Herschel Walker fight Trevor Prangley. Why not?
I don't think they want to derail Herschel Walker that quickly.
Really?
I mean, you think I just mean the fight against Hoger Gracie. If he goes out and takes him down and chokes him out in 20 seconds, the mystique and the, you know, everything they've been building up with Herschel Walker. Did you notice Herschel Walker was on the poster and they left some of the main card fighters out? Like some of the main event fighters off the poster?
Yeah, definitely.
Which is
how many more times are fans going to tune in to see Herschel Walker fight someone you've not heard of?
Hopefully not again, right? Like I would think that string is played out.
Yeah.
And if you're Strikeforce, you can't be putting any kind of promotional, you know, capital behind Herschel Walker because you don't even know if he's ever even going to fight again.
Yeah, he won't commit to when his next fight is, but he says that this is what he loves and this is what he's going to do, but we've heard that before too.
Okay. Well, you know what, let's move into the land of the more logical upcoming business. UFC 126, Anderson Silva versus Vitor Belfort, Saturday in Las Vegas. You know, something I keep hearing in the analysis of this main event, even among other fighters, is, you know, the line is like, well, the fight could last 30 seconds or it could last 25 minutes. And if it goes quick, it favors Belfort. And if it's a long one, it favors Silva. I mean, do you agree with that sort of generalization? And how do you fight? How do you see the fight playing out in general? Chad, start with you.
I think I, you know, cautiously agree with it. I don't know if you can rightly say that early on the fight favors Belfort. I think that you can say Belfort's only chance to win is to knock Anderson Silva out early, unless he suddenly comes in and disproves this decade-long track record he has of kind of fading down the stretch in fights, and especially in big fights. The thing that I don't know if I'm buying is this hypothesis that Belfort will be the toughest test of Anderson Silva's career, or like whatever they're trying to bill him as, like the world-class striker who's going to come in and put Anderson Silva to the test. Like, if Anderson Silva loses this fight, I think it's probably because Anderson Silva is 35 years old. Like, I think if you know, if we can consider both these guys in their primes, I think if Belfort comes out and strikes with him, he could just as easily get knocked out as anything else. So I don't know. I'm not really, I guess I'm a seller on Vitor Belfort at this point, but that doesn't mean that he might totally go out and win. It could go either way.
Yeah. Mike, your take on the matchup.
I don't know. I guess I've kind of bought into the hype on Belfort. I've been, you know, he's probably, if I had to pick a fighter that I've liked for the longest, it would probably be him. But I don't know. I think that if you look at the fight with Chael Sonnen, I think that Vitor, other than takedowns, does everything better. You know, Sonnen caught him a couple times with punches and dropped him. I think that, you know, if this comes down to a striking matchup and if Belfort can close the distance, I think that he's going to put Anderson in some trouble. I don't know if Anderson, to me lately, just doesn't seem like he really, you know, it's like he's not, I don't know if it's that he's not trying, that he's kind of giving up, but ever since he started that talk about wanting to go in box professionally, he hasn't put on the performances that we're used to seeing from him. I don't remember the last time that I watched him fight and went, man, you know, he's such an exciting fighter. He puts on such a great fight. He's kind of gone into, you know, just winning mode, you know, and the whole, I guess, showboating thing where he started against Damian Maia and getting pissed off against him and Talis Latus.
Yeah.
I don't know. We haven't seen the way that he used to fight in a long time. So I'm starting to wonder if like Chad says, maybe age is catching up with him. Maybe he's getting bored. I don't know what it is, but I think this is going to be, you know, I don't know if it's going to be by finish, but I think Belfort is going to beat him.
Interesting. So you're calling for the upset.
Yeah. I've been calling it from as soon as I heard it was announced. I said, you know what? That's an interesting fight. It's not just because I'm a Belfort fan. I just think that he offers way too many, I don't know if it answers to everything that Anderson has. You know, everybody talks about different levels of black belt and everything else. But, you know, I think Belfort's been a black belt for a lot longer than Anderson has. And he's been fighting, you know, a lot longer. He's had championship fights before. Everybody talks about him having, you know, this weak mental, you know, something mentally wrong with him. And interestingly, I saw something today on that Countdown show where he was asked about his sister and he said that she's still missing. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute here. Like, there was a report that they'd found her, like, charred remains.
Right.
Or, you know, that the people that killed her admitted to it. So I don't know if that's just a mental thing he's doing, is that, you know, because they never really, like, found her body, or because he hasn't really, you know, maybe they didn't discover the remains, but pretty sure everybody knows what happened there. And I don't know if that's just him trying to, you know, make it like a holy whatever, but I don't know. I don't know if he's as mentally weak as everybody's letting on. I think that's just mostly just people guessing about why he's lost in the past and why he's lost some of the big fights that he's lost.
Yeah. And I will add that, you know, sort of like Chad said with saying Vitor is Anderson's biggest challenge. Like, I understand that's mostly promo and hype. But then again, I mean, you could easily make the argument that Vitor is the best striker that Anderson Silva's ever faced. I mean, you just look at some of the last guys he's beat in the UFC, and it's like, you know, Vitor is just more dangerous with his hands than any of those guys. So he certainly has a chance, absolutely, to score this upset. I'm curious to see how it plays out. On the other hand, they're already rumbling. You know, you see this story today of Dana White saying, you know, if Anderson Silva wins, he beats Belfort, and GSP beats Jake Shields, we're going to make these guys fight. That's the super fight to make. Silva versus GSP. I don't know. Any thoughts? Picking a winner? Is it the match to make after these guys, if they both win? Chad, thoughts?
Well, I think that more than anything makes you believe that Belfort has a chance to win, right? Just because, man,
right?
A super fight between the number one and number two pound for pound fighters in the world, that can't possibly happen. Something's got to come along and screw that up before the UFC gets.
Well, this isn't Strikeforce. This is the UFC. They're not as cursed.
Yeah, that's true. I'm really torn on it. I may have discussed this previously, just because obviously on one hand, it's a really cool fight and you really want to see those two guys, especially with their contrast of styles, you'd love to see them fight. On the other hand, with all the talk that St. Pierre won't come back to welterweight if he goes up to middleweight, to me, strikes me as kind of a big loss to the sport in general to have St. Pierre go up to this other weight class and just sort of like vacate the welterweight title, assuming that he beats Jake Shields. Because then what do you do with welterweight? Like, is Josh Koscheck your champion? Is John Fitch your champion? And those guys are just sort of, they're the champion, but everybody knows that they're only the champion because the actual champion was too good and had to leave the weight class. So to me, yeah, I do want to see the fight, but I'm, you know, I feel a little bit remiss that the going line seems to be that we would lose St. Pierre for good at 170 pounds. I mean, and I saw the poll on the front page of Cage Potato this week of the who would win the fight. I voted for St. Pierre, but I was surprised to see how lopsided it was that 60 or 65% of the people had also picked St. Pierre.
Yeah.
Because, you know, him moving up in weight against a guy as big as Anderson Silva, you never know what's going to happen.
So. Right, but I think people are still have the Chael Sonnen fight still fresh in their mind, where right. Chael's pretty much able to take him down at will and lie on top of him, and they feel that would be GSP's game plan as well. And I mean, that's certainly a big chance for him to win if that's how it went down. Mike, do you think it would play out that way?
You know what? I think if you match up these guys' weaknesses that we've seen in their last handful of fights and their strengths. You look at GSP's chin from what Matt Serra did to him, and you look at Anderson's takedown defense, which was exposed by Chael, which is probably GSP's greatest strength right now, I think, is his wrestling. I don't know. It's one of those fights that I definitely want to see, but I don't want to see, because it's gonna somebody's mystique and somebody's, invincibility is going to be exposed. But I'm leaning towards Anderson just because of the size difference, and because of probably the reach difference. I think that he's probably, if it does go down, I think he's probably going to TKO George, which is interesting because, George hasn't even put himself in any dangerous positions with anybody striking since he got knocked down by Serra. But Sarah's not known for his striking and his power. And we've seen Anderson, his speed and his accuracy is just so much at a better level than anybody, even at 185, maybe even in the sport. So I'm interested to see. I'm like Chad. I don't know if it's going to happen, because I got a feeling that Vitor is going to win. But even if he doesn't win, how soon? There's a lineup of guys to face both of the champs. So it makes me wonder if Dana's just hinting it, meaning we're going to do it before. I guess there's probably two or three fights left on Silva's contract. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's one of those things. It's I think he's just teasing fans because fans are asking for it. I can't see them lowering the stock of one of their champions like that. And again, is George going to be expected to move up? Are they going to meet at a catch weight? Like, what means is it going to happen under?
Yeah, it sort of falls apart when you start looking at it too closely. But as a concept, I think it's exciting. It's really great. But we'll come back down to earth a little bit and talk about UFC 126 some more. The on-paper co-headliner is Forrest Griffin versus Rich Franklin. A tramp stamp tattoo may or may not be on the line. Who has more left in the tank at this point? Mike, start with you.
I'm leaning towards Franklin on this one. A lot of people think that age is a big difference. I guess there's about a five-year age difference between the two of them. But I have a feeling that just seeing, how hard Franklin's been training and how he's been talking about, kind of taking one last kick at the cat, everybody kind of laughed at him when he said he wanted to work his way back up for a title shot sometime in the future before he retires. And you never know, beating a guy like Forrest and then moving his way up to I don't know who he'd fight next, it could be any one of the main challengers that they've got. I'd put him up against just to see how interesting of a fight it would be. But I think that he's going to win just by being maybe more technical and by being probably just better prepared for the fight. I think his game plan is going to be better, and I think that he's going to beat Forrest because, both of them have had a long layoff, but I think Forrest has been quite a bit longer. So it's going to be it's another fight that I'm really looking forward to. The card from top to bottom, it's a pretty decent card. So I'm thinking that it's Franklin, and I think that he's going to win by decision.
Probably tend to agree with you. I mean, just the fact that Forrest Griffin is coming off that year layoff, and even he just hasn't had a really impressive fight in a long time, and I think Franklin's hungry enough for it, and I think he wins the striking exchanges, and I think he holds most of the advantages here, but just more importantly, I could never throw money on someone who's just coming off a year of not doing anything, more than a year at this point. Chad, who takes it, Franklin or Griffin?
I guess I'll be the dissenting opinion. I say that. I mean, I just think that Griffin's size, his length, and his I assume it will be a reach advantage. I think that this fight is kind of tailor made for him to kind of, if he fights smart. That's the thing with Forrest Griffin, is that if he fights smart in sort of his like leg kick oriented offense and just sort of throws jabs and keeps Franklin at bay with leg kicks, I think that this is a fight that he can easily just kind of stay on his bicycle and outpoint him to a decision. And I'm continually reminded by, I think it was after the Chuck Liddell fight with Rich Franklin, when in the octagon after the fight, Joe Rogan asked him if this meant that he would be staying at light heavyweight full time. And Franklin's response was just kind of be like, I guess if that's what they want me to do, you know, like he didn't sound pumped about being at 205 at all, even though you could argue that he's always looked better at light heavyweight than at middleweight. But, you know, I just think that and Franklin's age and the fact that he seems, I think his fighting style kind of plays into Griffin's strengths. I don't know if I would make Griffin the favorite to pick, but I wouldn't mind throwing a little money down on Griffin as an underdog if I could get him there.
For sure. Moving on, bigger fight than that, I think, in our opinion, is John Jones versus Ryan Bader, because it actually has, you know, contendership implications. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think we all feel that Jones is going to win this fight, right?
But I do, but I think it could be closer than a lot of people think, but go on.
Well, just assuming he does win, I mean, should he rightfully get that next title shot? I mean, Dana White said recently he was going to give Rampage a shot first. I mean, what makes sense? Chad, yeah, go ahead, because, you know, talk about how this fight's actually going to be close first. You could be the dissenting opinion again.
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of people are just totally discounting Ryan Bader, which, I think says more about people's expectations for John Jones than it does anything negative about Ryan Bader.
Of course.
And when you consider, like, Jones is sort of consummate game planning, you got to believe that he's going to be ready for any of the things that Bader might throw at him. But at the same time, man, Bader's 12-0 and is just, he's one of the only guys that Jones has fought so far that I think can maybe physically stand up to him. Bader is just a huge man, yeah. A huge guy at 205 pounds. So, you know, if I'm picking the fight, I would pick Jones to win. But at the same time, Bader is just so big and I think has the potential to be so powerful that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Jones doesn't come out and blow through him like he's blown through everybody else that he's fought.
Devil's advocate, Bader doesn't jump, knee, or spin. Mike, your thoughts?
He says, yeah, I don't know. I think that Jones's game plan, you know, he's talking about how he wants to come out and do something flashy, and I think he's relying too much on that. And I think that what's going to take to beat him is going to be somebody that just goes back to the basics and clinches and, you know, closes the distance. He can't jump, you know, jump and spin and kick and do flying knees when somebody's, you know, in his face taking him down to the mat. And actually, you know what? I've been thinking long and hard about this fight, and I kind of gone back and forth who I think is going to win, but I'm going to probably, you know what? I'll pick the upset and say that Bader's going to eke out a decision, because I think, you know what? I don't think he's fought anybody that has been able to smother him the way that I think Bader's going to do. I think everybody kind of just sits back and waits for him to do what he's going to do and wants to react to it. You know, even his fight with Brandon Vera, I think Vera was kind of just waiting to see what he was going to do rather than taking the fight to him. So I'm going to say it's going to be a decision. And yeah, I don't see Jones being that effective with all this flashiness that's gotten him as far as he has in the past.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, assuming that does happen, let's say Bader wins this fight. Going back to my earlier point, as far as the sort of title ladder in light heavyweight, would Rampage rightfully, you know, take his shot before Bader?
I don't know. If you look at even the fact that, you know, Jones beats Bader, that's only one real challenger that he's beat. And if Bader beats Jones, it's the same thing. You know, I'd like to see them each beat one more guy that's kind of ranked in the top five in the UFC before you just kind of throw him in there with the title shot. Because if Rampage...
Like Rampage himself.
Yeah. If Rampage is supposed to be getting this next shot, then it would make perfect sense to throw him in with somebody like him, because, you know, you look at how often guys like Rashad and Shogun fight. You know, if Shogun wins, even if he loses, you know, he's going to have a knee injury probably again, because that's the way things happen these days with champions, you know, stepping away and having to take time off in between fights. I think he's going to win that fight, And I don't, you know, it could be months and months and months that we have to see these guys sit out. Why not put them in against a guy that'll be a perfect litmus test again to see where they stand? So that's my, that would be if I could talk to Joe Silva, and, you know, he doesn't take our calls anymore, but he, if we could talk to him and suggest something, that would be a fight that I'd want to see.
Yeah. Moving on, this is another card with a pretty interesting preliminary lineup. You know, you got Donald Cerrone making his UFC debut, Michihiro Omigawa returning to UFC as a featherweight after turning his career around in Japan. If you remember a few years back, he was lightweight in the UFC and he went 0-2. And as I sort of wrote on the site a couple days ago, the UFC debut of Kid Yamamoto, relatively unheralded. He'll be facing Demetrius Johnson. Apparently, this is going to be shown on the UFC's Facebook page. That's how far Yamamoto has fallen at this point.
Or how desperate they are to get friends.
Yeah. So let's talk about Kid Yamamoto. It's kind of hard to say how he'll do against Johnson. I mean, it's his second fight at bantamweight. He's coming off of, you know, beating some random journeymen. And before that, he lost to a couple pretty good guys at featherweight, and Kanehara and Joe Warren. But, you know, it's like it's his first fight in the UFC, his first fight on the American mainland. Has the game passed him by? Will Kid have an impact in 2011? Chad, any thoughts?
I think he could certainly have an impact. I think if you're the UFC, let's be honest. Joe Silva and Dana White know more about any of these fighters than any of us do. That's what they do all day, is watch these guys fight. So you got to believe that, you know, in giving Yamamoto Demetrius Johnson in his first fight, you got to think that they think Yamamoto will win. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense unless they just want him to lose and go back to Japan. So yeah, I think he could have an impact. I think he's explosive enough and powerful enough that at 135 pounds, if he's knocking guys out in the first round, shoot, it only takes a couple of those before he's a marquee guy for them, I think.
True, but I see Demetrius Johnson as I don't want to say he's on another level, but he's certainly a step up from that dude he beat in Japan. He's he's a serious prospect, and Yamamoto could run up against him. I don't know. I'm very nervous for Kid Yamamoto in this fight. I think he could potentially lose this one. It's just like, you know, he's got some stuff going against him. I'm not ready to say he's back quite yet. Demetrius Johnson's pretty tough, and we'll see if the explosiveness is enough to get him through. I don't know, Mike. Do you have a pick on this one?
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna go with Kid. I think 135 is probably the best spot for him. And I think, you know, you look at the guys he's even beat at 145. You know, he's beaten guys that are in the UFC, like Rani Yahya, who, you know, we saw what he did to Mike Brown. You know, he's beaten guys. Bibiano Fernandez is another guy I think that a lot of people don't, you know, look at him as how good he actually is, and people don't realize how good he is. I think that he's going to come in. I think he's going to win the fight, and I could see them, you know, putting up an immediate, you know, the fight that everybody's been wanting to see for years and years and years is him and Uriah Faber. Now that
right.
They've got the weight, you know, I think that would be the next step for him. So I'm hoping he wins it, because it's a fight I want to see.
Absolutely.
You know, I'd like to see them bring Bibiano Fernandez in eventually, because he, you know, I interviewed him last summer, and he was talking when he heard, he hadn't even heard yet that Uriah had moved down to 135. When he heard that, he was excited, because he's like, you know what? He goes, I'd fight him at 135 in a heartbeat. So I think, you know, some of the lighter weights that are coming in and the guys that they're coming in, it's like they're actually focusing more on their lighter weights, because they know how fast and how furious these guys fight. So I hope, you know, I think he's going to take it. And I think that, I don't know, you know, people have a lot of excuses and reasons why he lost those two fights that he lost, but when you think about it, you know, they were both decisions and they were very close, I heard. So one was a split, one was a unanimous. The one with Joey Warren was very close, I remember. So I don't know. I hope he comes in, and I hope he lives up to the potential that he has and to the hype that you know. It would have been nicer a couple of years ago before those losses, because then people wouldn't be talking like this. But I think he's going to come in, and I think he's going to beat Demetrius pretty easily.
Yeah. Good point. It's interesting that Yamamoto is buried so deep, and as I mentioned before, Omigawa and Donald Cerrone, they're in the prelims, and yet they still have Jake Ellenberger versus John Fitch's replacement, Carlos Eduardo Rocha, on the main card. I almost don't even want to, you know, cover that fight at all. I don't know. I'm not moved by it. But then Miguel Torres is on the card. Antonio Banuelos is his opponent. I don't know. Any sort of quick pick on that fight, Chad?
Torres, that's my quick pick, right?
Yeah.
Let me just agree with you real quick too, that I, you know, you look at the card and this Ellenberger fight against Alberto Del Rio or whoever the hell he's fighting.
Carlos Eduardo Rocha.
Yeah,
his name.
Yeah, Alberto Del Rio. It's like, it just, I don't know how they left that fight on the main card when Omagawa and Chad Mendes is on the undercard, yeah, because that is a serious, serious featherweight fight. And it's just kind of, I don't know. I'm speechless. I didn't mean to interrupt you or
break us
off on a tangent. But
I don't know what to say about that fight either. But it sort of leads me into something else, which is you bring up Mendes versus Omagawa, which I'm also really looking forward to. And Omagawa, to me, he's like the Japanese Leonard Garcia, and the fact that like he always brings a fight, and judges love him a little too much. But the two of them together, I think that's my like leadoff pick for fight of the night. So maybe we could just throw out our fight of the night picks for this card. I'm saying Mendes Omagawa. Chad, you say what?
I agree with you. And that's the fight I'm most excited for. Maybe short of Bader Jones, it's just the fight that I think has the most sizzle at this point.
Right, Mike. Fight of the night.
I'm going to go with Torres Benuelos. I think they're going to go out, and I think that being, you know, people talk about how the WEC was basically like the UFC for lightweights. I think being in the UFC is exciting. Both of those guys, from what I've heard them, you know, talking on Twitter and in interviews, I think they're going to go out, and I think that's going to be probably, yeah, I'd say that's my pick for fight of the night.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good fight, most probably. But you know, I'm thinking Torres could finish this guy. I think it might be too one-sided.
Yeah.
I'll just put it like that.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
I don't know if Benuelos has enough to you know, hang with him to make it fight of the night caliber.
And so, somebody's got to get the shit kicked out of them or both guys to be able to make it fight of the night. So.
That's right. Hey, a Cerrone Kelly, that'll be another standout.
Slobber knocker.
Slobber knocker, of course. Well, that's pretty much all I have.
Yeah. Good evening and thank you. It's great to be here. Cheers. Appreciate it. This song's called Nothing As It Seems.